This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 358 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Marlo R. Marlo, we remember you from the original Pod Abroad, or I should say the inaugural Pod Abroad 2018. And we miss you, and we hope you're doing well. Ginger, because Summer couldn't join us, Ginger, meaning I guess I should do first person. I remember that very special weekend.
You mean the weekend before everything shut down for COVID?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the weekend before no one could stay in the house anymore?
Yes.
Yeah.
We stayed at the Twilight House. Was that in Washington or was that in Oregon? In Washington, right?
I believe it was Oregon. You did not drive to Washington. Calm yourself.
Summer, it's like on the border of Oregon and Washington.
Ginger, it's not in Washington. It's in Oregon.
I didn't say it was in Washington. I'm saying it's like on the border of there. It's that far north. Anyway, yes, I did that, and that was the time frame.
Forks is in Washington, for sure.
I'm not talking about Forks. I'm talking about this place.
The actual Forks. I know. I'm just saying the actual Forks is in Washington.
Yes. So we had a great time. It was the best we could go before everything shut down. But yes, we remember you, and thank you again, as always, as we are so thankful to all of our co-producers for supporting us in this way on Patreon. We will give you the straight-up link, dude. No digging. Even if you can click it, if you know, once it comes out, whatever. Find out how you can support us on Patreon in this very special way. We'll share that link at the end of the show. And we also wanted to say we still have a few spots left on our Pod Abroad 2021 trip. We are very excited. I know it's hard to kind of get excited, or maybe it's super easy to get excited because
it's super easy to be excited about travel. Because guess what? We can't do it right now. So everyone's excited about the idea of travel and planning your, like, trust me, everyone has been locked down. They've been locked down travel wise. So why not explode out of quarantine with a bang when they finally let us and go someplace super cool? Come with us. Let's all go to Scotland together and squee about Outlander.
Our third Pod Abroad trip tour in 2021, which will be, I believe, September. Yeah, September. The dates, I don't have them memorized. I apologize. I will share that link in a second. Oh, heck. Podabroad.com. Okay. Podabroad.com. Yes, we got the URL early because we're like that. Anyway, so the reason we're excited, okay, is Scotland. It's Outlander-centric. It's history-centric. We have the best tour guide you could ever want. We have the best tour operator who was there, boots on the ground, who shows up and has dinner with us and has a good time with us. I mean, we had all of the ones we've had have been kick-ass, but we have yet again probably the most, let's just be honest, we really, 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 really had a great time in 2019. I wouldn't change it. But after having experienced the two different leaving dinners, we have decided to go back to the Royal Yacht. So all this to say, you will. That is a way to kick off a trip. Not even kick off. That's a way to end a trip.
Because you're still going to go. We're still going to take you.
Yeah. Oh.
You're still going.
To what?
To the house. What's it called? The house. What? Where did we have the leaving dinner?
Hopeton. Hopeton House.
Thank you. You're still going to Hopeton. We're not taking it off the itinerary. We just know that you're going to have a bomb dinner. We're just going to eat on a yacht instead. That's it.
So you'll have all the stuff of both years, but this year we can guarantee a dinner on a yacht. And it is an experience and something that some people who have traveled extensively and rather well, who joined us in 2018, said that was it was unrivaled in their decades of travel. So, and heck, our tour operator, our guide couldn't hang that night, but our tour operator came and she said that it was beyond.
The only note that I have for Pod Abroad part trois, is it trois? No, un deux trois. Yeah, trois.
It's the third.
Yeah,
So we are excited to invite you again to join us. We still have spots, and you can find out all the information, the price, the schedule, the itinerary, all of that on or at podabroad.com.
So announcements this week. It is an announcement. The announcement is, and no one's paying me to say this, is that I'm currently listening to Clanlands, Sam Heughan and Graham McTavish buddy road trip book. That it's so funny because, I mean, that's the only way you can really explain it. But what's so funny is that they wrote this book during the travels that became Men in Kilts that has not aired yet. So this is all kind of like behind the scenes kind of stuff. But what's so funny about it for me, and if you even listen to Diana's forward, because Diana Gabaldon does the forward for the book, is she's like, I don't even know how to really describe this. It's not a novel. It's not a this. It's not, it doesn't really fit into any category. And if I had to describe it, it is literally 10 hours of Sam calling Graham McTavish Prissy, and a baby, and also Lady McTavish, lots of that. And the entire time, Graham is calling Sam a crazy person and all kinds of euphemisms for Ginger. Like, his nicknames are all Ginger Nut, Ginger, blah, blah, blah. They all have Ginger in it. So Ginger, when you listen to this book, if you do, you're going to feel like attacked. But I'm super enjoying it. It's a lot of them talking about their backgrounds, and not just their interest in history and their interest in Scotland, but also, you know, how they came to be what they are today. But there's also a lot of really fun behind the scenes stories about being on set. So I, again, not being paid for this, I bought it myself with my Audible credit, and I've been enjoying the heck out of it. It is 10 hours of hot Scots men in your ear telling funny, funny stories and making fun of each other. So please, if you have Audible or you have access to any, however you listen to and or ingest your audiobooks, go find that one immediately. You'll thank me later.
We will see. No promises as to timeline, but we are actively looking into doing a giveaway. So don't give up hope. We're going to see if we're going to see what we can do.
Wait, there's a giveaway and I bought it. What the hell?
We're going to see if we can do a giveaway. Okay, so I don't think I have any other announcements.
It's pretty. It was a pretty monumental week for me listening to that book. And now on to our read-along. Week, we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with chapter 25, entitled Ashes to Ashes. And to be honest, this chapter was an amalgamum of...
Just take off one of those syllables.
I won't. Because this, what happens in this chapter was absolutely featured in season 5. But It was taken out of... It was combined... With the Dutch cabin, right? Is that what it was called? The Dutch cabin? So they combined.
Which is also from book 6, yes.
Right, but that was like early book 6. But they combined cabin with this 2. Cabin. Yeah. So we have already seen this. Don't look for this in next season of Outlander because you've already seen it.
Jamie's preparing to leave. Martina P. writes, Jamie and Roger are getting ready for a visit up north to visit the Cherokee. Jamie is appreciating the improvements Brianna made to his saddlebag. I really like this little scene and love it when Jamie is grateful for the things his women from the future have created. I also love the family scene when they say their goodbyes and Roger being very impressed with Jamie's authority to control little Jamie's behavior. Who else would like to know what Cherokee phrases Ian has taught little Jamie and what he is repeating to Clarence? At this point, at least in the first paragraphs, we don't know necessarily where, but obviously we find out very soon. And I wrote, he's preparing to leave. He loves fingering the saddlebags Bree had stitched up for him. Yes, I know that's very inappropriate to say, but I left it.
You love fingering saddlebags too?
Did not say that. I said I left the sentence there. She has prepared for him a first aid kit. And it's so funny when to get past the fingering, or maybe it's in the middle of the fingering. I don't know. So seeing Jamie look at all the stuff and Diana describe all the stuff that Brianna has done. And he's like, he obviously is thankful, right? He's not unthankful or lack of thanks, whatever. However, it's hysterical. He's like, you know, yeah, I'm not going to need this soap on the road. I'm going to hide this.
Could you imagine, though, being the first person to receive a first aid kit where you're like, how accident prone do you think I am that I need to take this with
Except that he knows because of Claire that all it takes is a tiny, tiny scratch to get an infection that kills you.
Or, you know, a snake bite.
Oh, no, that's not tiny. Ain't no first aid kit's going to help you with that. You're going to die. If Claire's not near you, you're going to die.
I know, but you could. Okay. Can you remember the first time you saw a first aid kit where you were like, this is a bit much? Like, where you're looking at yourself and like, when is that going to happen here? Like, I can counter that with the last time I remember seeing a first aid kit that was so lacking in first aid items that I was like, this is not a first aid kit. Because I remember when I was a lifeguard, I had lifeguarded at a high school they were adults. It was adults with developmental disabilities and they were all using the baby pool. So I was there. They hired me out from the YMCA and I went over and I was basically lifeguarding for these developmentally disabled adults. But at the same time, the summer school classes had all of the students swimming in the pool and doing crazy stuff. Well, one of the kids did a backflip off of the side of the pool, and because they didn't have anybody else doing first aid or available, you know, as the next most skilled person present, I ran over to help. And I asked the people to bring me their first aid kit. And they brought me an index card holder, a metal index card holder box that had cotton balls, Physoderm, and a Band-Aid in it. And I said, I can see his kneecap. This will not help me. So that was to me, like, I opened that box. I don't know what I thought was going to be in that teeny box, but it was definitely a subpar first aid kit for sure.
I have the workings, like it's not complete, but I have like a decent amount of stuff for a first aid kit. And as you were talking, I was thinking like how I think every household, whether you're single or have 100 people, that's a village, whether you're whatever size your household or single, and it's even let's not leave the pets out, there is a lot you can do for, you know, I'm not saying don't seek vet care, but if there's like a cut or something, you know, obviously you can use gauze or even a washcloth, whatever. But I was thinking about like, what do I have that would fit into a first aid kit? And I have like, you know, I've got Band-Aids. I've got, I don't think I have calamine lotion, but I have some anti-itch, like some prescription cream that, heck, I'd put on if I itch that badly, I'd put it on there, right? I'm just thinking general. I've got ibuprofen. I've got cough drops. I've got some sporadic things. But I don't have a place for things like ibuprofen, Benadryl, or things that I might go to that I might need, you know, slightly more frequently in my kitchen in a small area of a shelf, of a cupboard. Whereas I have my Band-Aids and all that kind of stuff in the bathroom in a bin. And so I'm just thinking as you're talking, like, I need to get something that's a proper kit that if I had to, I could like grab and go. You know what I mean?
Nah, apparently all you need is Physoderm, Band-Aids, and a cotton ball.
And Windex. Don't forget Windex.
Because that is the appropriate high school first aid kit.
So it's funny as he's going through all this stuff. And it's not just the first aid kit. It's more than that. But he did, or Diana did remark on that. But he leaves a few things. I forget what Diana wrote he hid them behind. But he takes a few things out and hides them behind something so that, you know, they'll be discovered soon enough, but not before he leaves. So he's like, I'm not taking that with me. And I think one of them was soap, though. I could be wrong, but that's what I...
He removed a cake of soap.
Okay, good.
She had added, along with a few more unnecessary fripperies.
Yeah, exactly.
And carefully hid them under a bucket, lest she be offended.
He's like, no, sweet girl, I'm not taking this with me. But he also wants to...
What do you think a frippery would be? What do you think Jamie Fraser would consider a frippery? In a first aid kit. Physoderm?
I don't know. Maybe another piece of soap wrapped in ribbon? I don't know. So, Brie and Jem come out. Brie and Jem say goodbye to Roger and Jamie.
Jem does not say goodbye.
They are saying goodbye at this time. They're taking their leave.
Jem says, take me with you.
They're going to visit some of the village of the snowbirds, or at least one of the villages of the snowbirds. And Jamie, of course, in his role as Indian agent. And Gideon is literally a stud. It's a lot longer than what I'm reading, but that's what I'm doing. I'm not necessarily, I'm not reading all the details. And after they take their leave, as they ride away, Diana tells us that Claire was in her window brushing her hair. And my first thought was not, oh, that's nice, he gets to say goodbye. I was thinking, do you remember, does this remind you of another scene?
The ghost in the window?
Well, yeah.
The ghost in the window?
Well, I wasn't thinking ghost. So I didn't think of the ghost. Yes, that is the ghost scene, absolutely. But I wasn't thinking of the ghost. I thought of Frank looking up at the window. But yeah, of course, Jamie, I can't talk. Jamie was too, absolutely. So absolutely, yes, yes, yes. Martina P. writes, we are in Jamie's POV when he reminisces about his personal goodbye to Claire and how embarrassed he was what he did to her, his love bites being visible even from a distance. Such love and passion. It is sad, however, that we never got to see the markings of their initials, C and J. It has such an impact, and it is mentioned over and over throughout the books. Just like in this very moment when he looks at his hand with the faded C initial, sees her in the window, and has a feeling he might never see her again. So filled with foreboding and massive danger ahead. Diana describes some clouds. So he's like, they have about a day or three, I think about 3 day or ish journey to get to the village. And they don't believe it's going to be rainy. And Diana describes some of the clouds as mare's tails. So of course I had to go look that up. And why are clouds, certain types of clouds, known as mare's tails? So according to Wikipedia, which I have copied here, cirrus, okay, I'm going to do the Latin because it's all I can do. Cirrus uncinus. It's probably uncinus, but I'm not going to say that because that sounds disgusting. Uncinus, whatever it is. Uncinus. Uncinus? I can't say uncinus. That just sounds bad. This is a type of cirrus cloud. The name cirrus, gobbledygook, is derived from Latin meaning curly hooks, also known as mare's tails. These clouds are generally sparse in the sky and very thin. So these clouds occur at high altitudes at a temperature of about negative 50 to negative 40 centigrade or negative 50 to negative 40 Fahrenheit. They are generally seen when a warm or occluded front is approaching. They are very high in the troposphere and generally mean that precipitation, usually rain, is approaching. So Jamie's mostly right as far as no precipitation. We don't get it in the chapter, but that's what the clouds say. He is happy that Roger's there with him, but he does miss Ian. What happened? Well, he'd gone away in the night and he took Rollo. Jamie is sure it's due to the matter concerning Ian's wife and child, him disappearing. He hadn't told anyone of his experiences with the Mohawk. All he'd brought back with him was, quote, an armlet made of blue and white wampum shells, unquote, which we have certainly seen in the show as well. Now, this, and I know Summer said it, and I think your words, I know they were specific, but they were also quite general, because you were talking about the house and the burnt house experience and the people, and that is absolutely true. It's definitely been combined with chapter 2, the Dutch cabin, and we saw it in season 5. And this is also part of it, right? We've already seen Ian's restive and restless nature. We've already seen his depression. We've already seen his missing his wife and daughter, or his wife and child. We do see him with an armlet. So Summer, remind me, because apparently I'm not remembering, how far did we get in season 5 with Ian's story?
The most he talked about it was at the river.
Oh, with Roger.
With Claire. Oh. When he was pulling, I think she was roasting f-ing peanuts. Is that episode with all the f-ing peanuts?
Summer hates
She's roasting
the peanuts.
Peanuts. I just hate that it took a whole episode for her to make a sandwich. Anyway, then the episode took place over like a month. Like, it was not like an episode that was like a 2 day thing. It was a month, and it took her a month to make sandwiches to feed everybody to try for the first time. I call shenanigans. Anyway, I think the most he talked about it was in the river when he was doing something in the river. I think he was looking for fish or something, and she was roasting peanuts on the side. And he was asking about the stones and could he use the stones to go back in time to fix whatever happened with with the Mohawk. Like, he never says what he did or why he wants to go back. He's not ready to do that. But he definitely was trying. He wanted to use the stones himself to go back in time to repair or fix something.
So this is an example of where part of it was in season five, but not all of it, right? Because we don't know. And we still, in this book, having not, if you haven't read it, you don't know maybe all of the stuff, right? Like, you don't know a ton of detail. But we know enough that it concerns his wife, and or that Jamie supposes he believes that it likely concerns his wife and child. So the fact that that shows up in chapter 25 and we don't know it. Yeah. So in it, and that is not even the words wife and child. Yeah. So we don't know even that much in the show. So Roger and Jamie traveled mostly silently, but as they eat, Jamie is telling Roger of what to expect feast-wise, since, you know, it makes food, Summer. It makes sense when you're eating food to have thoughts about other things that have to do with food.
You know who's not making food this Thanksgiving? Whatever,
that was interesting.
Me.
Us. Yeah, I have my Trader Joe's is now selling, or at least they were. I don't know if they're out anymore. As soon as I saw it, I bought it and put it in my freezer. I have a whole box of tofurkey plus gravy. So I'm going to cook it and then just heat it up. So that way I don't have to cook it for like an hour or anything.
Dear listeners, it's important to note that I cook most of the food for family gatherings. And I love doing it.
Almost all the desserts, a lot of the foods, yeah.
I love doing it. However, I had wrist surgery this year on my dominant hand, and I am just not up to cooking all the things. So I have graciously offered to cook a few things, but I was like, can we please order food?
But yeah, so they're eating, and Roger tells Jamie, and they're talking about, okay, what you can expect feast-wise. So they got a decent amount of food as they left, right? And they ate the stuff that would go bad first, and then they had like the harder biscuits or whatever it was that they had in the next day and that kind of thing. And so by the time they're done, it will basically, if the trip is timed right and they plan for it this way, they will be out of food or mostly out of food by the time they get to the Snowbird Village. And at that point, they will be welcomed with a feast, basically. So Jamie is telling Roger of what to expect feast-wise. Once they get there, they'll be mostly out of food. But, you know, don't worry. They're going to like, you know, they're going to feed us like kings. Because funny note, we're representing the king, kind of, right? And it's polite to basically almost. Now, he didn't say this, but this was the picture I got in my mind. It's polite to basically eat until you barf. He did not say that. It's not a Roman orgy thing, but it seemed basically it's impolite to say no. They really want to feed you up, so it's very.
But that's standard. That's what you do when anyone visits. The first thing you do is like, "Are you hungry? Can I get you a glass of water? Do you want some tea? Do you want some biscuits?"
And if you're not hungry, would you still like more?
Exactly. I'm sorry, you just ate. Can I feed you again?
It's just
like exactly. Thanksgiving. It's like you show up, especially if you have multiple Thanksgivings, because there are some people that go to like, because they can't just go, well, maybe not this year, but generally they can't just go to one person's house. They have to see all their family, right? So they go to the first house and they just eat a little bit, and then they go to the next house and then they just eat a little bit. Yeah, it's like you.
Have you seen, all the episodes of Vicar of Dibley, right?
Yes.
Okay, there's an episode where she is invited. She was as a vicar, right? Not just as a private person. The vicar, played by
Don French.
So Don French plays the Vicar of Dibley. It's a great show. I mean, it, and there's so little of it that there's no excuse for everyone not to watch it. So it's that. I mean, I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but there are like five or six seasons, but they have like six episodes or four each. I mean, come on, it's very little
on Netflix when Netflix was still mailing discs.
Yeah, me too.
So it's been a while.
It's a great show though, and it was on back in the day. At least it was on PBS, like Monica the Glen was. So there's a lot of shows that a lot of people were introduced to via PBS. See, PBS is great television, people. The reason I bring up that is there's an episode, one of the Christmas episodes. I think it was the last or next to last one, because they did several. You know, each season they had usually one Christmas episode, and the people not necessarily took pity, but either they themselves were going to be alone, and so they invited her. Like, there was one man, I forget his name, but the guy who was like a sheep shagger dude, he invited her. He's like, look, I'm cooking all this stuff. I want you to come over. And she's like, I can't. Because she loves, you know, she's a, she was a, she has, the actress has lost a lot of weight, but she, at that time, she was a pleasantly plump woman. I don't know if there's a better, more PC way to say it, but she was very, very loving and firm and firm. That's weird. Very confident in who she was. And it was her part and parcel of her. And it wasn't an issue, right? It wasn't anything that was played up. She, her character, loved good food, but also really loved chocolate. And so she, I'm sure she had like, a Christmas spread or whatever, but she was looking forward to having some time on her own, because again, she's serving the community. She's in church. She's in the community council meetings and all these things. So she was looking forward to having some time and having her own Christmas meal. And she's invited to one person, the Sheepshagger Farm dude's home for Christmas. And she's like, oh, well, and she's like, well, I don't know. And he's like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. I meant I'm always going to be alone anyway. And she's like, of course, guilted. And she's like, fine. Yes, I'll come. So she's like, okay, I can handle one. I'll just have a little bit and then I'll leave. And it spirals and snowballs. And she goes to like four different ones. And every time she goes, she's trying not to get sick. But it's so funny. Like they bring out and she's like, oh, please just, I have to go somewhere after this or whatever. And like, please just a little bit of that. And they bring her out and they bring out like this huge plate of whatever it is that they know, because they all know her favorite. So they're all making. Anyway, that's what I thought of when we were talking.
Yep. Every meal. And that's the thing. It's like everyone wants to be fed. The meal that is the meal to remember, yes, right? So they're all the pulling meal. Out all the stops.
Try to include a link to that episode, or at least a link to The Vicar of Dibley. Let me see. I don't know if they have a site or anything. I think it was BBC. Martina P. writes, Jamie seems a little worried of having Roger find out about the young Indian ladies who kept Jamie company during the night. So after that, Roger tells Jamie about the potential problem with Hiram Crombie. So Hiram Crombie, if you remember, I don't know if it was chapter 24 or chapter 23, but a few chapters ago, because it's been a little while, right? There, one of the native, I don't know, I think it was a Cherokee, but someone, yeah, it was a Cherokee. A Cherokee person had brought a bag of bones. They said, here's some bones. It was of a white person, and they knew that they believed it was someone, I forget the last name, but the last name was the same, I think the same as the maiden name of his wife. And I think his wife had died, right? I don't think he was doing this on his own. I think his wife had died. But alive or not, it was his wife. The same last name as his wife. So, or what they're told. So then they have a burial for him. And you remember there's like a little snickering going on. And I don't know how the name came up, but Bree at this funeral they were having mentioned the name Ephraim. And so they lovingly or jokingly called the person to whom these bones had belonged Ephraim Crombie's wife's maiden name, last name. And so Hiram Crombie, who's again, he's not one of the rich goblins, right? He's one of the newbies. He was so touched or so whatevered by the thought that some of the Native Americans out there, or some of the Cherokees, some people who were aware of this. Oh, I'm so sorry. I don't think the guy who died was a white man.
I think he just wasn't one of theirs. And they were like, we don't know their burial rituals. We're going to give this to you.
He was either a white man or he may have been mixed. I don't know. But there was a reason they brought him to Jamie, though. So Hiram, though, is so touched by this, or at least made to have deep thoughts about it, that he's like, huh, if there are Native Americans out there, and they are, there's a possibility that they're my wife's kin, some must be saved. Like one of the main tenets of Presbyterianism is predestination.
I thought you just said a Prius, and I was like, a Prius? I don't think those existed yet.
Yes. Presbyterians must drive and own Priuses.
Don't do it.
And it's meant to be. So he believed if it was possible that some were his wife's kin, then some must be saved. They can't all be damned to hell or whatever it was. So Hiram is thinking, I need to go reach out to these Cherokee people, because some of these people might be saved or might need to be saved, or however that lines up with that philosophy. So he wants to, how does this involve them? Well, Hiram had talked to Roger, and Roger's now telling Jamie, and the reason is because Hiram Crombie wants Jamie to go with him to introduce him to some of these villages. And Jamie's like, and he, yeah, well, he wanted him to introduce him. And I think he also mentioned to interpret, but Jamie's like, no, not going
to
do it.
He doesn't want to take him. He's like, I'm not taking him. I want nothing to do with any of that.
Any of that. So about this time, they both smell something burning. And when I first read that, I was like, wait a second. It's too early for that wildfire. No, wait, that wildfire was in book five, wasn't it? So I'm like, where? I mean, not in the show, but in, well, there was a, I take it back. There was a fire of sort in the show. Anyway, there's so many fires. I can't keep them straight. Whew. So they both smell something burning. And this line made me cackle or made me laugh. Quote, Roger heard them first. A raucous caucus of cries and cackles, shrill as witches, unquote. I put, that's what this episode needs to be called, a raucous caucus. And actually, if we have another show, which I know we don't have time for, it needs to be called Raucous Caucus. Matter of fact, let me check if that URL is taken, because that's kind of ridiculous and awesome.
Maybe we just rock and cock. Rock cock.
Careful.
Rock the cock.
Guess what? It's a, what? Okay, we're not going to get it. So, okay, this is what I don't like. So is it available? I mean, is it taken and used for like commercial purposes? No.
No, but someone bought it.
Someone did buy it, though. Oh, yeah, they guess how much they're charging for it.
How much? $500?
No.
Tell me.
$8,888. So that would be a no.
What's with the eights, man?
I don't know. That's weird. But I don't know.
My caucus does not raucous that much.
Oh my goodness, that's so funny. So I just saw that line. Like, what we're about to see ain't so great, ain't funny. But when I saw that line, I did laugh. Okay. So two bodies, they go toward the smell and they find there are two bodies that had been hanged from a tree next to a house. The bodies had been covered in crows and a few ravens. And yes, those are, what do you call those animals that go?
Carrion.
They're carrion birds, right? Of course. Which makes sense why they're there. But, and maybe because they are carrion birds, they are portents of death, right? They can be in some cultures. So the hanged people had been a man and a woman. There was a piece of paper pinned to the man's leg that read, "Death to Regulators." Now, somehow, Jamie knows that these people have kids. Now, we don't know yet. Later we find out. But at this point, he says these people have kids. He says that they must look for them. They can't find any at first. And Jamie says there were at least three and that he'd found some of the bodies. So then Jamie cuts down the bodies of the hanged couple. And as they're looking for rocks to cover the bodies, they find a young girl who is still alive, but whose skin is covered in burns.
And you'll remember this from the Dutch cabin in season five.
So this is an example of what Summer said, what they combined. So, yes, they find the girl. And if you will absolutely, as Summer said, remember that this was in at the top of episode, like, I don't even know, 10, 11, 9, toward the end.
It was the beginning
of the episode.
I mean, it was when you could tell that we were veering into book six.
Yes.
In season five. Because that's when, right as we were about to learn about the Browns having their little groups of people who are running through pretending to keep the
banditti.
The sanity banditti. And safety.
Yes. In the book, what happens is what we're talking about right now. But yeah, in the show, the whole Brown group, banditti, does not include, I'm just thanking God that they at least kept the separate, I mean, I guess they had to. Yeah, they had to. They kept the separation of Lionel and Richard, right? So I would not call it a Brown. I would call it a Brownsville, maybe based or affiliated group. I would not call it a Browns group, although those people may have been a lot of Browns. But yeah, so they had to keep Richard out of it because Richard's our big baddie. They're setting him up for season six, which we need because a lot of shiz goes down. So
now I would say one of the two main differences between how they adapted this from the book and how the book was written is that one, this is not the Dutch cabin anymore. So these are different people, but they also didn't mercy kill her. They just stayed with her till she died.
Yeah, I was a little surprised.
And she called out.
I don't want to talk about the show because this is the book, but I am surprised. I mean, I don't want to talk about it for too long. It made me wonder, again, I can't say right now because we're not there yet in the book, but certainly has not happened in season five. It makes me wonder as far as, and without saying any details, makes me wonder how much of Roger's personal storyline they're going to keep as far as his goals and his experiences in season six or what happens in book six. Now, a lot of that is, not a lot of it, the way it ends book six is, it can still end similarly as far as their reason for doing a certain thing, okay? But a lot of book six, which we'll find out, has Roger in a certain arc. And the show, because they kind of, we don't know yet, but I will say this specific situation, because they did not allow Roger, I mean, or Jamie, but specifically Roger, to do the merciful thing, it still can have an effect on him, obviously. But him actually doing it, at least in the book, it's a much deeper effect than just finding someone who's dying and being with them till they die, right? It is different, flat out. Mm-hmm. So I can't say much more because we're not gonna spoil what Roger's trajectory is in this book. So anyway, but it makes me curious if they're gonna keep that, because I don't believe, it's not about them being capable of it, but just knowing what they've done in the past with some of similar storylines that are of a certain nature, I don't see them doing it. I honestly don't. Okay. Which was a lot of words to say absolutely nothing, because I can't talk about what I'm talking about.
That sounds about right.
Right? So they find the girl. She's just gone. She's or dying, covered in dirt. They give her some water.
She's bone deep. She is bone deep burned. Like, there is nothing. Not even if Claire was there, there's nothing. There's nothing they can do.
Not see like a bump. See a heart. They could. So there was some kind of either everything was already burned away or it was somehow translucent. I'm guessing it was burned away.
I have joked in the past about being so pale that I do not require X-rays. Because they can see through my skin and see all the things. Because you can see, like, in my wrists and pressure points and things, you can see all the veins, like where the veins come up close to the skin. So phlebotomists have a generally easy time finding blood, and shot people don't seem to have a problem. But I always joke that I don't really need X-rays because they just look at me and they can see what's going on. But I was never, you have never to date been able to see my heart beating through my chest.
They give her some water on a handkerchief, and she sucks at it. And Jamie asks her who did this. There's no answer. But she seemed to have, in her eyes, they could tell she understood, or at least there was recollection of something or recognition. So they believe she understood English at the very least. And Jamie asks who did it, and there's no answer. He asks if she'd been baptized. Jamie tells Roger in French, she can't live. Elle ne peut pas vivre, I think is what he said.
I would want to die if you talked to me like that too.
Then Jamie baptizes her, and Jamie makes a move. Not like it makes a move. I don't know. Jamie makes as if he's going. Summer, stop.
Wow.
He makes
so out of character, Ginger.
He is going to be the one to end her. But Roger says, no. I'll do it. And this is. Well, I think it's very touching when you read it. Don't get me wrong. But Davina, this is one of her best scenes or set of scenes, or best chapters in all eight books. This is one of her best. It is. There's a reason Davina, and I say this, so I'm blue in the face, I know, because people probably don't care anymore. But this is the only book that has won both a fiction prize, an international fiction prize, and has won, Davina has won an Audi for an Audi award, which is it's like the Oscars for audiobooks. And she won an Audi for her, for best, I believe best, best drama, best drama.
Vocal performance. Drama.
So yeah. she passes. Martina P. writes, "Now, ladies and gentlemen, who actually committed that awful crime? I have read the books, watched the TV show, and I still don't know. My first guess would have been the Browns and their self-appointed committee of safety, but Jamie dismisses this suspicion. Roger mercifully takes the life of this little girl, and forgive me for mentioning it, but I can only see the heartbreaking moment of the TV show and Jamie's prayer afterward. Such an utterly sad moment.
Up come some writers. Of course, at the head is Richard Brown. A difference here is that, and I can't say anything about the book yet, right? Because we're not there. But in the show, the banditti, at least the ones we saw, who were related to Claire's abduction, did not include Richard. So here it's interesting to see that at their head of this posse, at least for now, is Richard Brown. So we don't know if he's involved.
What did they call themselves? The something committee?
Oh, like yeah. Okay, so I don't know if this...
Safety committee?
No, committee of safety, yeah. I don't know if this exactly is an example of that or what. This might be because Richard Brown named himself that. So that would make sense. And then maybe the banditti are people who take it a little bit too far. And Richard... And I'm sure Richard has an inkling of what might be going on. But maybe because he's ahead, he can't really be seen out there doing it. I don't know. Maybe he just doesn't. He just turns a blind eye on it, to it. Now Richard, because they came up, they come up on Jamie and Roger, having, you know, buried or doing their best to take down the bodies and bury them the best they can. And now they have this little girl who's dead. This little girl who's dead. So they come up, and he thinks Jamie has done this. Jamie replies, "No, we're simply digging graves. We're trying to. They'd been a bit away." They'd been a bit further away and smelled fire, and so they'd come down to see. Now, Brown says that he had known the family. It was, I don't know how to pronounce this exactly. It's either Teague. I'm going to say Teague, but you all can. I will take any corrections that need to come my way. Teague O'Brien's family. Lionel Brown says it was Indians who'd done this. Jamie says they couldn't find any of the older children. So Jamie also is familiar with this family. Lionel says that the Indians could have taken them, and Jamie says he will ask around in the villages. So Brown still accuses Jamie and Roger of burning the cabin and hanging the couple, to which Roger asks, how did you know they were hanged? Because they hadn't told them. Well, Roger's getting like uppity, understandably. And Jamie kind of points over and says, like, well, you know, the ropes are right there. So we're not, I mean, right. good point, but there is a possibility that they saw the ropes. So the Browns and gang, which I thought was a genuine offer. And the reason I believe it's genuine is because they were pissy when they rode off. But the Browns offered, and their gang, offered to help bury them. And Jamie's like, nah, we got it. And they rode off pissy. Jamie says to Roger, it wasn't them, but they know something more than they're saying. And Martina P. closes us out with, while Roger and Jamie bury the bodies, a party of six riders comes along, the Browns and co. After a very hostile encounter, they ride off, leaving them to finish their task. This is the moment when Jamie says that the Browns were not responsible for the murder. This chapter opens with a rather lighthearted domestic scene and closes with nothing but death and ashes.
And that was chapter 25. And that concludes part 3. So next week, we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with part 4 entitled Abduction. And we will be doing chapters 26, An Eye to the Future, and chapter 27, The Malting Floor.
Get ready. That's going to be I want to say fun. That's going to be an episode.
And as always, if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation, like if you're just not done listening to, you know, us talk for 45 minutes and you want to talk to other like-minded individuals, please join us on our group at www.outlanderpod.com/group.
And again, a very special thanks to co-producer Marlo R. And if you'd like to find out more about how you can support us on Patreon and just what a co-producer is, visit us at patreon.com/outlanderpod.
And if you'd like to wear my art on your face or your chest or any part of your body that will be covered by an item you can purchase on their website, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
And to find out about our Pod Abroad 2021 trip, again, go to podabroad.com. Thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.